Let's call to order the this special meeting of the Improvements Committee for August 7th. First item on the agenda is Improvements Staff Report. Travis.
Good morning. Thank you very much. So I want to start off with an update on the pipe going from Granley's to Calero that we use to pump water from the Cosumnes River. As you can see the picture that's in the report, we did dig up the pipe, and that crack that's in the pipe is what we found. We also have kind of chipped away some of the concrete around the pipe to look at the steel to see which direction that we could potentially go for a repair. We are putting a camera back into the pipe this morning so we can look at the inside of the pipe, because the steel, when they chipped away the concrete away from the break, the steel looks still looks good. And if the inside of the pipe doesn't show any other breaks or issues, then the repair that we could potentially do is just weld a patch on it versus having to cut out a 10-foot stick and do and fabricating connections and stuff. So we will be, like I said, once at 10 o'clock, the camera crew is going to be up there, and we're going to be looking through there to see what we can see. I'll have a I will have a better update for you at the board meeting for this. Hopefully by that time, we will have a decision about which direction we're going to go, and if it's putting the patch on, we might even have it started or completed by then. So, any questions about that all?
So the pipe was encased in slurry or concrete?
The pipe was concrete lined, but all that was around it was just dirt.
I see. I got you. Okay.
So, because what happened is it looks like you can see the striations, it looks like the pipe twisted a little bit, and it's believed that was from, it wasn't compacted and set well and held well, and just over time, it's kind of twisted a little bit. So, once we do the repair, then we will be, when we go to put dirt back in, we will probably put some kickers in it to make it sturdier and make sure we compact it better, put some AB around it, so that way we make it more sturdy.
No.
Okay.
The item B, the Rio Oso tank flow meter installation update. I have Joe here just in case you have any questions for one of these items. We have found Joe and his team found some meters that we are able to actually strap onto the outside of the pipe that's going to the influent. It's actually going into the tank, so we'd be able to at least get a flow of what's going into the tank, and then we can do math calculations for the amount that the tank is dropping within a certain period of time to get an idea of what's coming in to the tank and what's going out. We ran this by General Matt, by Mimi, and she gave us the approval to get the meter. So we're in the process. We've ordered the meter, and we think it's how far out?
Well, they say 2 weeks to
so two
20 days.
Yeah. So once we get the meter, we will get it installed and get it working, and then we'll be able to get better data as to what's actually going into the tank versus what's coming out at high usage and flow period. The district raw water methodology.
Just quickly on the flow meter. I think in our discussion last time, it was said that the strap-on flow meters might not be as accurate as an inline one? Are we confident that this is?
Actually,
and secondly, how much is this going to cost?
I can do that part.
Yeah.
The accuracy is pretty good, actually, for these, because we have so much straight pipe before and after the meter on the intake of the inflow to the tank. It provides a straight pipe required to get it very accurate within like 0.5%. Really, really accurate reading from these. So that's one reason why we went that way, and also because once it shows up, we can strap it on that day and probably hook it up based on, you know, getting a little power over to that location. Even if we have an extension cord to do it, we could probably start looking at flows the next day.
Does it send cellular to, or do we have to manually?
It has a data recorder. We'll record at any time interval we want. And then it's like, you know, you pull a chip out or whatever, you know, and you plug it into your computer. It's like, you know, your camera's in the yard or whatever, you know, a game camera or something. It's got plenty of storage, you know, to get some really good accurate and timely information, so we can compare that to the time data for the storage tank, which we'll get it every minute or two, right?
Yeah.
So we'll know what's going on. I mean, that's what, you know, I've been saying, we have a model that we can run, but it doesn't really mean anything until you put real data to it. And the model is theoretical data that, mm-hmm. you know, that we're at a point right now where it's pretty sensitive mm-hmm. to what you assume in that model, and I would rather use real information. So if we have that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I'd like to get something before the end of the month, where we still have some warm days, and September will have some, you know, warm spells. So it would have been nice to have it, you know, this month. I mean, month of July, you know, with the days we were having consecutively, but we're not going to get that. But I think we can get some good data still.
We'll have enough.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you say how much it was?
No, I didn't say that yet.
Just say it'll work really good. Okay?
Gotcha. Very accurate.
It's around $6,000.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not bad.
In the total scheme of things, it's not so bad.
Yeah, and the installation, yeah. I think Travis and I could probably do it, but, you know.
Well, Joe and his guys can do it.
Yeah, it's not going to be a costly installation. So
that's great. You need maybe a month of data to be able to do it, or just a few peaks? Is that what you're looking
for? Yeah, we need some warm days. Yeah, depending. I mean, if it suddenly turns to fall and gets cool on us, it's not going to be. It's not going to be as useful, but it'll still be useful data on how water gets to the tank, you know, and how much and when.
Great.
But yeah, we're really hoping to get it in there quick.
Very good.
Moving on to item C, raw water methodology. Mimi, was this something that you wanted to talk about?
Yes, sure, I can handle this one. And I think we actually have a brief report in there. Am I misremembering that? I think
I'm sharing the report now, and then I'll go to the map as soon as you start talking about the map.
Okay, great. So this is arising from a request at the last board meeting in July, wherein former board member Merchant asked that we exclude Clementia Reservoir from the raw water storage calculation because he felt that it overstates the available supply of potable water. Staff disagree with this assertion and recommend no action be taken to omit Clementia, and we recommend this because Clementia has been considered a key part of the overall water system at Rancho Murrieta since 1983, when the original master plan was developed. And you can see the maps that are attached. And my understanding is that the original master plan intended for Clementia to be there as a valuable backup reserve in reserve for potable in extreme drought situations. So I don't feel like there's any justification for removing it from the report.
Well, I would tend to agree with you. It's just a number in a report. It doesn't have any negative effects from my standpoint.
Okay.
Agreed. I think if you don't think Clementia, we're ever going to use that water, even though it's in the report, I mean, I think you just subtract it out. It's just a report. It doesn't say that you're going to use it or not. It's just a number. Here's how much water is in the lake. Okay. Use it, don't use it. Assume it's going to be used, assume it's not going to be used. It's just a number in a report, and it's good information to have, is my opinion. I agree, Mimi.
Okay. We'll maintain the status quo.
Moving on to item B, bathymetric survey for Clementia Reservoir. Last board meeting, I was asked by Director Butler, wanted me to inquire about, if we had the Clementia bathymetric survey done, and which we had not have it done. And so I inquired about cost. I just spoke with Adkins Engineering because they did the other two, just to get a budgetary quote or budgetary cost. And that cost came out to $28,400. And if the board if the committee and the board wanted to move forward, then we would try to get bids from local engineering firms, which would potentially cost a little bit less because Adkins is in, I mean, they're in Oregon, so, you know, they have the drive time. So if the board does direct me to move forward, then we can put an RFP out and get bids to get that project done.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money, Marty.
I understand why we did it, the test for the other two lakes, because we're counting on the volume. Mm-hmm. But even in the integrated water master plan, they're not counting on the total volume. So I don't know why we'd want to spend the money.
Okay, it was an inquiry for what's it going to cost, and that was, like I said, I inquired with Adkins because they did it, so they kind of knew the dimensions of Clementia already. So that was what I got back from them. So I won't pursue it any further, unless I'm instructed to do so at a later date.
Yeah, I concur with Marty. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, we don't even use the total volume number in any calculations. It has more to do with how much runoff goes into it than actual storage, right?
Or water we pumped into it.
Yeah, let's put this on the back burner. I don't want to spend $28,000 to get a number that we don't really care about anyways.
Okay. Next item is the RFP for the professional service for the district engineer. We put an RFP out a couple of months ago for bids for the new district engineer services. We ended up receiving two bids back. I got together with Director Pohl earlier this week, or last Friday, I remember, and the two companies that put in bids were Domenichelli and Associates, and then a company, SNC, out of Pleasanton. Based on the scoring criteria that we have here, Director Pohl and I were in agreement as to our scoring. And as it sits right now, Domenichelli and Associates would be the recipient of for our professional services. And so I brought this here so if approved by the committee here, we can take it to the board for approval.
Do we have a problem only getting two prices?
You know, I inquired about that, and that's all who submitted it, and I think Travis said you contacted some to find out why we didn't get others.
Yeah.
And I don't think we want to delay it for another round of bidders myself.
Mimi, is it a problem that we only got two pricings on this?
It's unfortunate, but if that is all the response that we got, it's acceptable to make a decision off of those, unless we wanted to, extend the final filing date to, shake the trees a little bit more and try to get more bids. But I think from a procurement perspective, we did the RFP and this is what we got, and so we can go forward with that unless we're not very satisfied with, the results, it's either the price or the quality, et cetera.
So this needs to go to the board for approval, correct?
Yep.
So, yeah, I'd recommend we send it to the board.
Okay. So when you contacted the firms that weren't interested, what were you getting back?
So I contacted Dewberry, they were one of them, and then another, actually two other ones kind of gave me the same thing. Their question was, well, is Domenichelli and Associates resubmitting for the job? And I went, yes, I said, he told me he was. So they're like, okay, well, we're not going to worry about it. We'll just let Joe do his thing. One guy said, well, if your regular engineer is going to resubmit, I'm not going to waste time and money, putting in a bid. And I told the guy, I said, just because Joe submitted is not rock solid that he's going to get the job. We're going to be looking at these thoroughly and making a decision, and so they chose not to put in a bid.
Okay, I concur with Marty that we recommend approval and send this item to the board.
Thank you, so for the agenda.
Item F.
Okay. So item F is proposed enhancement of district meter technology and leak detection. I'll turn this over to Mimi.
Okay, thanks, Travis. I think I've been pretty clear in the last several GM reports that we've had this ongoing issue with meter readings that have been problematic. And we kind of have a crazy quilt of different types of meters that are out there, most of which are only readable through drive-by truck, you know, visits to pick up the data. And there have been a lot of advancements in technology for meters over the last several years. And the district actually was exploring enhancements to advanced meter infrastructure as far back as early 2022. And I don't know why, you know, nothing was ever done then, possibly because it can be cost prohibitive. But we've, in the last couple of months, talked to two vendors. One is our primary vendor currently for a particular type of smart meter that uses radio frequency and has two different pieces that are, you know, components of the meter. And it also has the receiving infrastructure, which is usually a base piece of equipment and then an antenna to capture the data remotely from throughout the entire community. And then that infrastructure includes software that allows the information to be connected to our utility billing system so that all of that information is fully accessible and we'll have elimination of the drive-throughs and the ability to, you know, just see more easily all that usage data. There's another technology out there that we've been evaluating that is it includes acoustic leak detection integrated within the meter. And this technology uses ultrasound, and it's been very popular in the last 2 or 3 years in the U.S. It's a company that I think is based out of Norway originally, or Germany. I'm sorry, I forget which. But that technology has added benefits of simplicity in that the leak detection element is integrated in the meter, and so it's just one piece of equipment, and it's also governed by a 20-year warranty. And so we're evaluating all these options of this, and then also learned that there are several financing or reimbursement grant opportunities that are out there with the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation up to about 50%. And so we're still, I've got some calls planned with Bureau of Reclamation and the Regional Water Authority, water efficiency expert. And I think this is something that the district needs to move forward with because of state requirements that we provide water loss audit reports annually as soon as we hit that 3,000 user threshold. Additionally, we currently, or at least back to the December 2022 acre feet usage information, which was included in some of the original slides or story maps for the IWMP, shows about 1,700 acre feet used per year, but our loss through, you know, non-revenue water leakage is about 200 acre feet a year, which is about 12%. So this is water that the community needs, And the beauty of the acoustic leak detection is that it finds small, insidious leaks that are, you know, hard to detect, but really the biggest loss leaders. The geysers that come up that are really dramatic do waste water, but it's usually a short-term situation that's resolved quickly because it's visible. It's the ones that are below surface, invisible to the eye, that are ongoing for years and decades even, that result in tremendous loss. And the acoustic detection enables us to get really close to where the leak is and then resolve those. So there have been several cities that have had even bigger, you know, water loss than the district, closer to like 51%, you know, and they've recovered their investment really quickly by dealing with those leaks. So our recommendation is to keep moving forward with the evaluation of costs and the potential for grant reimbursement and get the district to a more reliable metering system and a clear leak detection system that's ongoing.
We have a number in our capital improvement project list. These numbers look bigger than that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't have the capital improvement plan up in front of me, but I think, so I'm not sure what the CIP included, if it was just a replacement of the receiving equipment or if it was a wholesale. I'm remembering it now. What we were talking about doing for the capital improvement plan was just to transition all of our not smart meters over to smart meters. And we were tackling, I think we threw in about $100,000 for fiscal year 24-25 to replace just those. And that was before I learned of the leak detection technology integrated into a meter. And then we kind of pivoted from that to this bigger concept of replacement to these specific types of meters that also facilitate leak detection and the AMI, the metering infrastructure with an antennae. So that $100K was just to, you know, continue the drive-by data collection and just switch out the not smart meters. So this is bigger.
It seems to me it's worthwhile to study this and figure out which is best for the district. So I'd concur with your proposal to keep going.
So I know that in your reports, service reports, we're replacing so many meters as we get to them. Those meters are smart meters, but they're not, you can't read them through the system we're talking about. You still have to drive by and read them manually. Is that correct?
These meters should be compatible with a remote radio frequency collection system. What we have currently with the smart meters does not include the leak detection component. So that is the enhancement that I'm recommending we consider in order to be compliant with anticipated regulations that will apply to the district as soon as we cross over into the 3,000 territory, and then also just to make sure that we don't waste any water. And the AMI, the AMI cost recovery grant program is an add-on to help defray that cost. I think if we're talking about an overall cost for the acoustic approach at roughly $1.2 million, the Bureau of Reclamation could contribute about $600K. So then we'd be talking about a net increase over the 100 for the CIP of about a half a million.
So are we considering replacing the new smart meters with these acoustic ones also, or this, I'm assuming this would be phased in, and the smart meters that we just installed might last a few years and be the last to be phased in, or would, I know you're just looking into this now, and I'm probably getting ahead of discussion, but I guess that needs to be thought about if we're going to go down this road. Does that make sense?
Yes, and those questions we've kicked around. I don't think we've purchased the new meters yet. We kind of held off on that when this information became available. But those newer smart meters could be adapted with a device to make them be fully remotely readable. And so we're kicking around the ideas about how to approach it, whether to do all at once, all roughly 3,000 meters, or to do, you know, a more phased-in approach. We don't really have a good data set of the different types of meters and their lifespans, so we'll be trying to collect that information as part of the overall analysis of the proposed conversion to a more effective and efficient metering system that also helps us with leak detection. So yeah, all those types of, you know, factors are in our heads in terms of figuring out, you know, how we would approach it and what would be the best approach.
One last thing. Is it possible to buy a few of those ones that have leak detection and reporting of the flow, just to try it out, see if it's all what it's cracked out to be?
We can definitely ask them for some demos and demo software to be able to see, like, how it works.
Yeah. I say keep going.
I agree.
Keep going?
I agree.
Okay.
Especially pursuing this Bureau of Reclamation rebate or whatever, and whatever other financing we can find. I think this is a worthwhile project. Travis, maybe you can, but just because it's acoustic and it knows how much water's going in and there's a little bit of water going in, how does that tell you that there's a leak? I'm thinking about my swimming pool when it gets to, it's constantly filling on a hot day. Is that going to show up as a leak?
I can't
picture it.
Yeah, this technology is a little bit, we haven't really got to dive too much into it. I know Mimi spoke to one of the reps, and I know that question was asked several times because we spoke to our current meter company and then this company that Mimi had spoke to. I don't quite understand how the technology is going to determine just constant flow, like for your pool or an actual leak itself. If I remember correctly, if there's constant flow for a period of time, the data gets sent to a terminal that we have here that says there's a potential leak here at this meter, and it's something that we would investigate. But I'm not 100% clear on that.
And I can shed a little bit of light on that, but I have to make a disclosure that I'm not an engineer. I'm just playing one on TV. this is my interpretation of it. It's ultrasonic sound where the meter itself has the inflow and the outflow, and the sound waves that travel in between are captured in order to detect the usage, and that's their methodology. So it's a different, it's not a physical flow thing like old school meters, but that sound, the engineers at this company realized that they had valuable data in that sound, and what their system does is it parses out sound data that is potentially like one-time blips, like a big truck going by that rattles everything and makes a noise. And they hang on to the data that is like a constant noise, like a perpetual drip, right? And that then they take readings of sound from nearby meters in order to triangulate and figure out where the potential leak is, and then they provide that information. So you get this raw data, but then it's also sort of aggregated and packaged up into information about potential leaks. But it's all based on sound. So it's very, it's really their technology for the meter that they're capitalizing on in order to be able to differentiate between different sounds, to be able to isolate what they believe is the sound of a leak, if that helps you.
No, I think I'm getting the picture. I'm skeptical of salesmen, people that have the latest, greatest.
Yeah, we
thing,
actually got the technical guys, too.
I'm getting it. I can see how with AI now, maybe the when the pool overflow thing shuts off, but there's still something else there that's background that's constantly there, maybe it can be picked out from the noise. But it's an interesting concept. I still think that that we should pursue it.
Moving on to item H.
CDEFG.
I'm sorry. I'm moving on to item G. Rio Oso distribution system storage capacity. We have this on hold right now until we get the meters to put on the pipe so that Joe can put forth an accurate study. Well, we left it on the improvements committee. That way, if you had any questions or if there was any discussion needed, it would be available here for that. But at this time, until we get the meter put on the pipe, and we get some information, and then once we do that, Joe will go ahead and get a report to bring to the improvements committee and then the board.
Okay. Anything, Marty?
No, thank you.
Mr. Jankow, I do have a public comment.
Okay, let's hear.
Mr. Pyle.
Morning.
Morning.
I'm assuming that the distribution issue with the Rio Oso tank is summertime only, or does the alarms go off in the winter as well?
Are you okay if I...
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, it's just in the summertime when there's the irrigation.
So when we have a meter on there, is it possible to experiment with things like alternate day watering for the people that are using that tank Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, so that we can see what the effect is if only half the Rio Oso tank people are using their water on certain days, if that solves the issue. And then as well, on the way over, I don't usually look at these things, but I noticed that there are lots of gutters flooding over this morning with water streaming down the street. And I'm curious, with all the talk of the water emergency, why we're not putting in conservation measures or enforcing the measures that are already here, and if there is anybody going around and checking for those things. And then also, during our construction, we're using water trucks, Joe, and I don't know how that factors into the use of the tank, because that's going to be happening while you're doing the metering. So I want to make sure that that's not a permanent situation where we're pulling water out of those fire hydrants.
How long are you going to be pulling water out?
For the next couple of years.
But you're almost done moving dirt out there, right?
We'll have water trucks out there. We're hoping to pave in November. And so over the wintertime, we won't be using water trucks, but next year we'll be using water trucks.
Well, we've got a meter on those.
Right.
Hydrants.
Right.
We know how much you're using because we're charging you.
Right.
I don't know if it's significant or not, but we have the information.
Yeah, we can use the information. It's good to know the time of day and all that, of course.
Right.
Because that's the operational storage issue.
Right.
You know, there's peak time of day.
And we're filling those tanks at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so that's good information. I'd appreciate
it. Is the Rio also fire hydrant hooked up? Because the last time I looked, 2-3 weeks ago, that wasn't even hooked up.
We still have one tank. I'm not sure which one it is.
Right now you're pulling from the Van Fleck tank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, there was a storm water capture project that was discussed to increase recycled water. I'd like to know what happened to that. Not today, but we could figure out where that went.
Go ahead.
So the other question is, will the 400 homes in the 670 FSA group, if they're completed, would that provide enough effluent to crank up the recycled water for the gardens and the commercial center? And then just so everybody knows, the Stonehouse Park is irrigated with potable water at this point. And then the last thing that I have is, to date, has anybody, as far as you know, looked into what the process is or how much it costs or how long it takes to do the conversion of Clementia into emergency storage?
Mimi, I think Michael was down that path. Has anybody picked up that process, or is it just gone dormant?
No, I communicated with the water permit specialist a week or two ago, and he said it's still in the queue. There's a lot of permit change requests that are ahead of us, but it will take some time. I think there were two paths, and sorry, some of this is going off of long-term memory, but the path to get it to be acceptable for potable can either be statutory, where there's a piece of legislation that says that it can be converted over, or there's another path that is a little bit less specific to it. But I think the proposal that is most current is that it not be a complete conversion to potable, but that it be available in the event of extreme drought and for, you know, just a few months out of the year. But it's all still in process. It's going to take a while to get a green light on all that from the state regulatory agencies.
So as going back a few items here, are we wrong in assuming that the actual volume in Clementia doesn't matter? Are we asking to use, in this permit process, are we asking to use the entire volume of Clementia?
I think we're only asking to use the pumped in portion, because the runoff, I think, is not something we have the right to. And I forget, I'm sorry, but I forget the split of what percentage of it is due to the runoff and what is due to the, you know, pumping in. But let us take a look at that and then come back with more concrete information about where we are in that permitting process. I think it was just sort of left on, you know, the back burner to allow them to do what they have to do. But that, you know, largely because there was a lot of opposition, I think, from the community about the potential use of Clementia and the lack of finalization so far regarding the IWMP. I do think it's a good idea to know what the split is, you know, in terms of the runoff portion of the reservoir and the pumped in. I think the pumped in, we just have those numbers from the actual pump. But let us come back with a little bit more information for you next time about this, so that the information is more accurate.
Great. Thank you.
I don't have anything else.
Thank you, Bob. Just a comment on, I think we got to get the meter on the tank, and you got to run your numbers before we start thinking about testing out options or what it. I think we got to. That's got to be the priority. Let's get that study done. See what we got, and then we'll go down these different roads that lead off of that.
Okay.
Marty, anything on?
I concur with you, sir.
Yeah. Item H.
Item H, proposal to authorize a comprehensive distribution system study. And Mimi, please correct me if I'm wrong. Joe had put in a proposal to do a complete district system study for the whole district, and due to the cost and the authorization of the general manager to approve, it was brought down below her approval rate, so that we could. So, and then was just zeroed in on the Rio Oso tank.
That's close. There was also another element of this, which is that the consultants for the IWMP had done some work modeling the Rio Oso tank and the distribution system. And so we asked Dominic Kelly and Associates to integrate that information into their assessment so that we didn't have duplication of effort. And then we focused just on the Rio Oso at that time. But the last board meeting, there was a lot of conversation about the necessity of doing an overall assessment, and so that's where this proposal comes from.
So, so that's kind of where we're at on that. Joe, did you want to?
Well, that original proposal that we submitted did take into consideration the modeling work from the consultant for the integrated water master plan, and we received that model from them, and we can do specific changes and modifications and calibrations just like we're trying to do for Rio Oso for the entire system. That's of course going to be more costly than just isolating Rio Oso. So I think that proposal is still good the way it was submitted. It's not like we would change anything, because we knew we would get a model, and we've already been modifying it to hone in on the Rio Oso issue. But of course, the entire model is operable, and we can take that strap-on meter and put it over on somewhere in, well, I guess we can't because it's underground.
We can't use the meter for the Van Fleck tank.
That's true.
Because the influent pipe is actually inside this, in the center of the tank and inside, and the effluent and the effluent pipes are all underground.
Yeah, they're underground. So. But there's more that we can do to look at the overall system, and we're already looking at some of those things, getting meters that do exist back online and working, and maybe adding some control features eventually, but you know, not for the study. The study is going to just take the information we get and that we already have and try to create a working model again that can be calibrated. We could do more hydrant tests, you know, to look at pressures and whatnot, how they react. And we mentioned that in that proposal also. It's not work that we're doing, that work we request operations to do, because then, you know, Travis isn't that busy, so.
Yeah. I just sit around all day twiddling my thumbs. Yeah.
So. On Saturdays and Sundays, you're wondering what to do with yourself. You're coming up, just open up a hydrant, see
just
what happens.
Just thinking what I'm going to do on Monday.
Marty, any questions?
Nope.
I don't have any questions except that this master water plan is kind of a it's dynamic, it's moving, and it's going to continue to move for a while as we ask questions and get answers from the consultant. So assuming that what you're doing is easily adaptable to changes that come down the pike.
So yeah, I think so. I mean, the model's not going to change. Their model is very thorough. I mean, they have all the pipe, and we've checked most of it to make sure that, you know, there aren't connections missing or something like that. We're specific to the distribution system and the storage tanks.
Assuming that there's enough water to fill the storage tanks, you're good. Your study's good to go.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I got it.
I feel that. That's correct. Yes.
Understood. Travis, item I.
Development update. There is a attached summarized development report in the packet, and it is what it is. I
can walk you all through that. So this is an attempt to centralize and consolidate all of our development data. This only includes right now the 670 FSA information, and you'll see that the number of lots is about 71 short of 670, which is why or how the 670 FSA got its name. That's because I'm finalizing or trying to solve the mystery of the Murrieta Gardens original EDU and the actual, originally they had 99, And we have 78 lots there, so there's a difference of 21. There's also the Murrieta Gardens commercial, which is another 50. So that's the 71 that brings us up to the 670. What I don't have included in here is the Rancho Murrieta North, because that development project has not been entitled yet by the county. Plus, it includes a variety of components, the villages, which is 697 lots, and also 39 acres, which is as yet unknown in terms of how many lots. We do know it's, you know, been suggested that it would be mixed use, commercial and residential, but we don't have lots, and this this tracking system on the developments is by lot. So what you do have, though, is most of the 670 and split out between the two main entities that are actually three main entities that are in play here. Retreats is done, 84 lots there. We have a little bit of a lag on a couple of those connections just while we're waiting for the finalization of Lift 6B, which was part of their agreement. And then 140 at Riverview, 30 of which are already connected, and 110 that are planned. And then residences of Murrieta Hills, east and west, with a total of 198. And then Lakeview is pretty much canceled due to the soil type, and that project property is in the process of being given over to the Sacramento Tree Foundation. So that one is not going to be a residential subdivision, and then the Murrieta Gardens. So this is just to give kind of a snapshot of what's out there in terms of residences. We've also got the different types of lots that are out there, which is important just in terms of understanding potential water usage, because the bigger lots have much larger outdoor water consumption. But this is also going to be a tool that helps us to ensure that we've collected all of the fees that we're supposed to collect for the different water connections. So it's a sort of a draft first go at this, and we'll just be adding to this and sharing it as we move forward.
That Lakeview is being given to the Sacramento Tree Foundation is new information to me. Is that how far along is that? Do you have the specifics on that?
I know it was something that Andrew was answering questions for the Sacramento Tree Foundation prior to his departure, and I haven't seen a finalized agreement passing the land over to them, but they are now asking us questions about, you know, what they need to do to, I think they'll probably have at least one connection, and I think there's also an outstanding obligation on that property for the Van Vleck Sprayfield project, that component of the 670. So I think they're very close.
Okay. The only other question I have is I don't see Murrieta Gardens commercial on here. Is that reserved?
Right. That's part of the 71 that I'm missing to bring it up to the 670.
Oh.
I have that plus another 21 of the Murrieta Gardens residential that I have to find and figure out, you know, how those were utilized.
Well, we've got Tony here. Would you like to ask him what happened to the 21 lots in Murrieta Gardens?
Sure. If he's able to help us with that, some of the record keeping that we've found has not been ideal. So, yeah, any light he can shed on those 21, that would be helpful. Or we can talk offline if he's more comfortable.
Yeah, we can talk offline.
If he doesn't have the info.
I'll I don't have it offhand, but I mean, we converted the development from what was originally entitled for 140, and we resubmitted to the county to include the residential lots and the commercial. So that took up the remainder. So I'll have to break out the numbers.
So you'll get together and sounds like a simple answer.
Okay.
Marty, do you have any questions on this? Comments?
No, it's nice to have something written down that shows where everything is. I appreciate that.
Yeah, this is very good. Thank you, Mimi.
Sure thing.
I do have comments from the public, sir.
All right, we are on to item.
Can I just add one thing?
Certainly.
Since after this was done just recently, I just wanted to update. You know, we've had several complaints about earthy taste in the water, mainly over in the Lago and the Para area and off of Guadalupe. We have started feeding carbon in the water. We can only feed it into plant 2 because we can't feed it into plant 1 or it'll cut up the membranes. So we're feeding it into plant 2 right now. Plant 2 is running at about 1,300 GPM versus the 800 for water plant 1. So it'll do some blending, and it will start to, that taste will start to dissipate. It's just coming from the high heat. It's just an aesthetic issue. The water itself is still perfectly fine. My operator that is working the water plant today drank the water coming out of the Van Flick tank, and he said he didn't smell or taste anything. So we should be getting the issue resolved fairly shortly. The residents that are calling and complaining, we're going and flushing the areas. We did quite a bit of flushing yesterday just to get fresher water into that area. We did put a notice on the website and on our social media stuff, just to let the district know, and to, you know, communication and transparency with the district what the issue is and what we're doing, that we are actually in the process of taking care of it.
That's a good point. When you flush, how much water are we losing? Is it substantial to this 12% loss, or is it insignificant, or do you know?
In the great, well, we don't do a scheduled flushing system anymore. We used to have a scheduled flushing system where we would do the entire system every in 3 years. We would do a third of it every year. Now, since the since maybe 2013. All we do now is we flush on water complaints. And so generally we'll flush most of the time, you know, most of our flushing are dead end lines, and we'll just flush them to, you know, the length of the court. Proper flushing techniques is you flush the length of the line 3 times. So we'll do that, and then we have a pedometer generally on the flushing, so we'll know how many gallons in a blow off line. We get roughly about 150 gallons a minute, and then we time how much we do, and then we put that on. We have a flushing spreadsheet that we use. We don't do a lot of flushing, and so I would say it's not, I don't want to say it's insignificant, because it's water loss, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot.
Yeah, I get it. 150 gallons a minute for 5 minutes is, I'd have to carry the 2 to 5. I don't have a calculator.
But I have 2 comments.
Sounds like. All right, item number 3, comments from the public.
They're actually comments on the development topic.
Oh, okay. Let's care about the development.
I'm okay.
You okay? Jeff?
Yeah.
Good morning, directors. I live at 7410 Acaso Court. My name is Jeff Berkheimer. I just wanted to come out this morning and provide what is probably a little bit different public comment in relation to the developments. You have to forgive me. I've been spending a lot of time trying to catch up on the last few years of the discussions around water supply, development, land use. I have a lot of concerns that you're only hearing from the public and kind of the echo chamber of those that are anti-development, and I would just say that's certainly not representative of the community as a whole. I think we do need additional development to support the businesses in this area, to support the fixed costs for maintaining your infrastructure, to support the country club. I was a little taken aback when I saw at a recent board meeting you had a director that was very instinctually trying to call for a building moratorium. As a ratepayer and someone who would ultimately be on the hook for any financial liability that would come from the impending lawsuits to that action, I would strongly encourage you to listen to outside counsel, legal advice. There are many things that have to be done before a local services district can arbitrarily take such a drastic action. And at the end of the day, if and when this moves to a very costly lawsuit, it will be us, the ratepayers, that are on the hook. So I don't want there to be a perception that you have 200 people showing up to your board meetings and they're unanimous for the community that we don't support development. That is absolutely not the case. Looking back at your previous engineering studies that the district itself has commissioned, you guys have known for over a decade about the potential need for additional infrastructure, for additional storage, for additional water supply to support ultimate build-out. And I think you're going to have a lot of challenges showing that you've made significant progress and exhausted all avenues before you just say, we can't serve additional developments. So, for whatever it's worth, there are many, many other people in the community that see the economical and financial benefits of having these developments and these homes. And again, I would encourage you to use some caution with your fellow directors who are under the impression they can arbitrarily call for a building moratorium. Because at the end of the day, that will come back on your ratepayers. So thank you.
Thank you, thank Jeff. You. Our next board meeting is when, Amelia?
August 21st.
Jeff, you might mark that down. The 21st is a board meeting. Did you say we had another, Amelia?
Those were all the comments.
That's the comments on development?
On development. I don't have any public comments.
You don't
comments.
Have any public comments? Any staff, any further staff comments, suggestions, Mimi, anything?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Yeah. All right. Well,
actually, let me take that back. We have received two requests for will serve letters, one from Riverview and one from Residences. For phase two of Residences, and I think phase two of Riverview, and those will be brought before the board on the 21st for action.
I'm sorry, I missed it. We have letters for
will serve.
We have a request for will serve letters. Yeah.
My ears weren't working there. Thank you for that. Marty, anything further?
No, I appreciate all the new input that we received today. Thank you.
Yeah, that's my only comment is good information, good reports. Thank you to everyone. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.